Greetings, listeners. You're listening to Colourful online and on DAB. And a very warm welcome from me, Kenneth Tharp. I'm delighted to be back again on Colourful for another interview related to the African Concert Series. And I have a very special guest joining me today. But before I introduce you to them, let me tell you a little bit about the context for today's interview and the forthcoming concert. The world's first ever African Concert Series was launched in 2019 by the award-winning Nigerian-Romanian pianist Rebecca Amodia, featuring 10 monthly concerts in various venues, including the October Gallery and the Africa Center. Described by the BBC World Service as the African art music makes a comeback, the program of the series reflects the depth and diversity of what is known as African art music, the richly diverse genre of music which forms a bridge between Western classical music and traditional African music. I'm pleased to say that in 2021, the African Concert Series has returned for the third time. The concerts that have taken place so far this year have been streamed from the Africa Center in Southwark, from the October Gallery, and one all the way from the Cayman Islands. And the next concert featuring today's guest will be streamed from Budapest in Hungary on Friday the 19th of March at 7:30 p.m. Please make a note in your diaries. In the meantime, do follow the African Concert Series and Colourful Radio on all social media channels, or head to the website www.africanconcertseries.co.uk. Now, my very special guest today was born in Morocco to a Hungarian mother and a Moroccan father. And having grown up in a musical household, he started playing the piano at a very tender age. By the age of 13, he had been awarded the first prize at nearly every major music competition in his native country of Morocco, before then moving to Hungary, where my guest received his professional training at the Béla Bartók Conservatory and at the Franz Liszt Academy in Budapest, in a musical heritage deeply rooted in the Hungarian tradition. Now, having established himself as a professional concert pianist, he is Morocco's leading representative on the international concert stage. In 2008, he was presented with the Medal of the Hungarian Parliament for his achievement in music, an honor that he shares with such distinguished artists as the great opera singer Placido Domingo. And indeed, that is just one amongst a long list of prizes and accolades. Described as a pianist of stunning natural virtuosity and delicate stylishness, his talents have taken him worldwide, performing as a soloist with orchestras across Europe, Asia, Africa, and the United States. He gave his Carnegie Hall debut in 2011, prompting considerable praise in the New York Times, who highlighted his rich colorings and flair, his lyrical musings and vigor, along with his burst of chords and dizzying passage work, and at the same time, marveled at his extraordinary ability to memorize music that seemed such a succession of arbitrary ideas. He made his Kennedy Center debut shortly afterwards to equal critical acclaim. He has been presented to luminaries of the classical music world, such as Daniel Barenboim, Zubin Mehta, and Sir Antonio Pappano, and has even been invited to perform for former First Lady Laura Bush. In 2014, he launched the Arabesque Project, designed to research and identify Arab composers of Western classical music and present their works on the international concert stage. This project is particularly dear to my guest's heart and is something we will be certain to talk about shortly. My guest is no stranger to the African Concert Series. His concert on Friday will be his third appearance, and I'm thrilled to say I got to hear him play during the first series in 2019 when he gave the most outstanding recital at the Africa Center, playing virtually non-stop for 2 hours from memory without a single sheet of music in sight. He is, without doubt, the most brilliant musician, and on top of that, a delightful man. I'm very pleased to welcome on air Mr. Marouane Ben Abdallah. Welcome, Marouane.
Hello, Kenneth, and thank you very much for having me.
It's such a pleasure and so good to connect again. I still remember so clearly the previous concert I attended, which was a sheer delight and a musical education, if I must say. How has life been during this strange year that we've had?
Well, I don't know. You can always be on the side of the people complaining and seeing the glass half empty, and or you can see the glass half full. Of course, we all had our challenges. And what is very interesting is whenever you feel pity about yourself, you just have to think of others and you realize that you are actually quite lucky. So you just stop complaining. But I think, There have been different stages during this long period. The first was like, you know, the shock when the whole world went to complete shutdown, concerts cancelled, flights cancelled. And well, I have to say, I tremendously enjoyed that first period when there was nothing to do. My blood pressure was very good at that time. I checked it. And, you know, there was no much to worry about. But then, you know, they kept telling us, oh, it's locked down for 2 weeks, 1 month. But no, now it's in Budapest, we just started the third lockdown. I mean, the third wave started 2 weeks ago, and the numbers are going very high. So it's been now a little long, but, you know, there are always other pleasures, other parts of your daily life that you can enjoy and make most out of them when you don't travel, when you don't have to deal with many other things, superficial things.
Well, that's good to hear. I think for everybody there have been some positives. I mean amongst the many challenges. Maren, I want to go back to your beginnings and your musical beginning, and something I know that you've said, because I read it in an online interview, was that you feel that your musical education begins in those 9 months before you were even born. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, I usually don't credit my parents much. Not that I'm ungrateful. On the contrary, I'm very grateful for what they've done throughout my life so far. So my mother, and it's a quote from Zoltán Kodály, the great Hungarian composer and scholar, teacher. He meant that musical education starts in the womb of your mother, because you hear every noise, actually, from the outside world. And my mom used to sing, used to play the piano, because she knew I could hear it. So this is why they say musical education starts 9 months before birth. And well, she had an experience once. She was quite advanced in her pregnancy. She could feel me move. And she attended a jazz concert. And it turns out I hated it. I moved so strongly, so violently. She could, you know, she felt it. Of course, I have to say I love jazz. It didn't affect my relationship with the genre, and that's maybe the one I hear more than classical music. I listen to more than classical music. And well, then of course my musical education went on through my childhood. She taught music at home, so I could listen to others. I could you know, I was very close to the piano, so it was very natural.
It reminds me, thinking of babies, it reminds me of the first time I visited South Africa in 2004. I was invited to someone's house for dinner. And as we waited for dinner, there were several people playing very loudly on djembes and congas. And there were two young kids in prams. And I thought, oh, how can these kids sleep? And in fact, it was amazing. They slept right through. And the only time they woke up was when actually the drumming stopped. I wanted to ask you something, because I know that you have a passion for, well, I know you have a passion for lots of music. And you've mentioned, I know two in particular, one being Rachmaninoff and the other Bach. And you said something when we had a brief conversation the other day, you talked about Bach being the source. And I wanted to pick up on that and wondered if you just had, I mean, I absolutely love Bach, so we have something in common there, but I don't have your musical talents, even though I do play the piano. What is it about Bach? What is it that makes you say something like him being the source? What does that mean?
Well, the purity of his music. There is no, you know, in Bach's music, there is nothing additional, nothing to spare, nothing that you would cut and leave out. It's like, you know, it's like a perfect masterpiece. It's like, you know, this, well, they say of the holy books and whatever you believe in. But for me, Bach is like that. It's something, it's like the, you know, the words from God, let's say, in music. And of course, there are different periods in our lives, but Bach's, and sometimes I felt him closer than others, but he was constant throughout my life. And during the pandemic, I played a lot of Bach, actually. I learned almost all six piano concerti. and I practiced other pieces as well. So, and well, you know, if you ask me what do I like in Bach, it's very difficult to say what. It's like, you know, there is food you like. Let's say talk about some simple food, the Italian, for example. Let's spaghetti with, you know, tomato sauce and basil. It's you know, it's simple, but it's so tasty. So I mean, after that you are overwhelmed. I mean, if it's good ingredients. So it's the same with Bach. I have to say, there are different kinds of interpretational groups, let's say, or tendencies. There is something that Glenn Gould has established, kind of a mechanical approach. And I had also that kind of period in my life. But now I'm much more closer to the periodic way of interpreting, performing Bach's music. So my source of inspiration are more string instruments, violins and others. But I found some very, very, very good recordings lately. And they've been a great source of inspiration.
Well, I think on that note, we've tantalized the listeners enough. Let's hear a piece of Bach and we'll talk about it afterwards. Well, thank you. Thank you, Maroun. That was you playing the Bach. Tell us about the piece.
Well, it's a prelude in B minor, written for organ, but transcribed for solo piano by Alexandre Zilotti, who was a cousin of Sergei Rachmaninoff. So my two favorite, my favorite is Rachmaninoff. Bach is among the favorite ones, and are somehow connected in this piece. And it's a very soothing piece. You see, it could be very, depending on how you feel, but to some extent, very romantic. And I love the progression, the harmonic progression, and the way it is built, and then how you arrive to, to the end. I think it's one of the most beautiful pieces.
I'm not going to disagree there. I'd love us to talk, Marouane, about your arabesque project, because I know how special this is. And of course, music from this features in your forthcoming concert. And I said in my introduction, this was a way of researching, identifying Arab composers but who generate music in the Western classical idiom and bringing their music to the attention of the international concert stage. How many composers' work have you discovered so far and presented?
So far, 108, to be very precise.
You make separate composers. Well,
and yes.
Chronologically, what kind of, are they all living? Are some past or?
Most of them are living because, you know, the first generation of composers goes back to early 20th century. So it's quite late compared to European music that goes back to very early. I mean, the most notable composers are from the 16th, 17th century. So yeah, Arab composers woke up quite late, but they are not very much publicized. So it was quite challenging. For many years, I didn't know they even exist. I knew of one composer, an Egyptian one, whom I'm playing in this concert on Friday. And I tried to research, to find, and you know, I asked some people in Egypt, actually, musicians, can you recommend me any composer from, he said, this guy says, well, there is me, but there are no other composers. So, and of course, Egypt is one of the most advanced country, culturally speaking. And they have, I mean, on my list, I don't know exactly, I have about 30 composers from Egypt. And some of them are really, really good. And you have perhaps Egypt and Lebanon are the ones who produce the most composers. And then you have composers from different countries, Syria, Jordan as well. North Africa, except Egypt, well, it's limited to very few countries. You have Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, but they didn't produce much composers. And I think that somehow reflects the country's cultural policy in the past decades, in the past century, unfortunately. But who knows, maybe it will change. People will hear this music. I mean, they have better access to music, Western music in general, Western classical music. So I think there might be many other composers in the coming decades and centuries, who knows.
Well, I mean, one of the things that the African Concert Series has been brilliant at doing is you know, giving visibility or audibility, let's say, to the work of composers who we simply might not have heard of. Do you have any sense of why it is we haven't heard of the works of these composers? Because it's great work.
Yes. Well, you know, I myself haven't heard about them for many, many years until recently. Because, well, they all work in their own circle. You know, some have wider circles, some have smaller, some are known locally, some are completely forgotten. You know, that's the most exciting when I managed to unearth some of them. For example, there is one Abdelhak Masri from Lebanon. He composed beautiful music. I mean, it has the pieces I found have nothing very typical Oriental, but it's truly beautiful harmonies. And he's completely forgotten. And I even, when I talk to Lebanese friends, they are surprised to learn about him. And there are others in Egypt as well. So, you know, this is the most exciting about it. And then you have others as well. I think, I mean, the whole project has been fascinating from the beginning. You know, in the beginning, whenever I heard the new composer and his works, I was so excited I couldn't sleep at night. I was, oh my God, this is amazing. This is amazing. And also the most exciting is to bring this music to the public, you know, to make them discover, open their eyes, broaden their knowledge about, broaden their horizons about, you know, Western classical music. And it's been very exciting.
That's so wonderful. Well, listen, I think we should hear a piece of this from one of the composers. We've chosen a piece, haven't we, by Nabil Ben Abdel Jalil. Forgive Good. My pronunciation. Let's tell the listeners briefly about this piece before we listen to it.
Well, this is a piece called Raqsa. and it means dance. And it was composed 2017. I premiered it at the first Arabesque concert in Rabat that we launched at the Royal Academy. And he uses, you know, I have to say, there are some music that you enjoy practicing and performing as well. And there is music that you hate practicing, but you love, you enjoy performing. And this is part of the latter group, because you have some very beautiful melodies, but you have also some dissonance that makes it so sometimes painful to practice, I have to say, I have to admit. But then when you play the whole piece, it makes so much sense. You know, he has his own aesthetic system, let's say, preferences, and you can like it or not. But I think it's very original because he brings truly Moroccan harmonies, Moroccan melodies, Moroccan rhythmic patterns, and mixing it with European music is always, you know, I think it's very exciting.
Great. Let's listen. Thank you. Maroon, thank you for that. Is there anything more you'd like to say just about the piece we've just listened to?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if you felt in the, you know, we just stopped it at the end of the middle section, and there is this very African mood, I mean, African rhythm, it comes partly from Gnawa music, which is Moroccan music, but goes back to, you know, sub-Saharan music. And that's why I chose this piece, because it's I feel a very strong connection with African music, because, well, these composers are more, you know, it's more closer to Oriental music, what they use in their music. So it's I mean, in the frame of this African series, I think it's important to show these parts as well.
Let me switch and just ask you, you know, really, I suppose, how many hours do you practice a day? I'm sorry, it's a very mundane question, but an important one, possibly. One listeners might be curious about.
Well, it depends. You know, it can go from 2 hours to whatever, 8 hours. But let's say a healthy average is 3-4 hours. It's not good to practice more, because our brain cannot focus longer than 7 minutes, actually. So whatever you spend beyond that is just, let's say, a waste of time.
That's interesting. I think that's one of the things from my dance background that I know that people are starting to recognize and understand the science of how we function and how we work, in that, and that just, you know, that it's one thing to immerse yourself, but actually just endless practice isn't necessarily productive. Very focused practice, I gather.
Exactly, and I will tell you something. When I was a student at the Bartók Conservatory, I was in my, you know, between 14 and 18. You know, it's a quite crucial period of time when you really need to practice. And I didn't have a piano, and I could only rely on the available rooms in the conservatoire. But they were, you know, there were classes. So in average, I could practice only about half an hour a day during that time, which was very little. But I had to focus. I had to, you know, plan my practicing meticulously. And, you know, let's say I reached the same level as others who practice the whole afternoon, evening. So...
Well, that says something, but perhaps both about your talent and your focus. There's a piece that I would love to play, listeners. It comes from the last African concert series, and partly because it displays your virtuosity. Also, I do find it musically interesting, and it's actually subtitled A Prayer to the Memory of Gheorghe Ligeti, who, interestingly enough, some listeners may or may not be familiar with his name, but I suspect they might be familiar with his music because, if I'm not mistaken, his piece Atmospheres was used in the film 2001 Space Odyssey. And also, I don't know the name of the piece, but anyone who's seen Eyes Wide Shut, in the Kubrick film, it also uses a very distinctive piece of Ligeti piano music.
Okay, and let me add something that Ligeti was heard once a group of musicians from Niger, and he was just mesmerized by that music, by those rhythms, and you can find that African rhythmic patterns in his music, in his piano music, the etudes, and many other pieces. So African music had its strong influence on Gheorghe Ligeti.
Oh, how interesting! I would never have thought that. Look, the piece I want to play. Tell me about this composer, Mohamed Fairouz.
Mohamed Fairouz, yeah, he's a very prolific composer from Egypt and the United Arab Emirates. He's based in New York. Most of his works are connected to some literary works, poems, dramas. And he, in this particular piece, he was inspired by a poem by Yehuda Amichai. And the title of the piece is Al Male Rachamim, which is also a Jewish prayer, part of the funeral service. So what is very interesting in this case is that you have an Arab Muslim, because not all Arab composers are Muslims. You have Christians, mostly. So in this case, you have this Muslim composer inspired by this Jewish prayer. And I think this is something very beautiful when you see this open-mindedness, when the people reach out to other cultures and find inspiration in it. I can also talk about the piece I'm going to play on Friday, composed by Nabil Ben Abdel Jalil, and it is a nocturne inspired by Maria Magdalena, one of the disciples of Jesus. So I am myself quite open-minded, and I love, and I think it's cultural dialogue is very important. And this whole project is about dialogue between cultures, between peoples. And I think these composers are true bridge builders, let's say, you know, between cultures, bringing different musical traditions and trying to create something in the middle where, you know, you bring, let's say, Arab, Moroccan, or Egyptian, or Lebanese melody, and you blend it with European harmonies, European rhythms, European structures, because they compose symphonies, they compose sonatas, they compose piano concerti. So I think we need that. We need that. And this was this is how the project started. And this is the main aim.
Well, fantastic. Let's come back to talk a bit more about the project. Let's listen to this short piece by Mohammed.
Oh. Fairwoods.
I enjoyed the fireworks there, Maroon. It was wonderful. Listen, as you've been talking, I was reminded actually one of the great joys of not only hearing you play when I heard you play at the Africa Center was actually the amount of information you shared about the music you were playing. And here you are doing it again today. It's wonderful. It's an education talking to you. Clearly that context and thinking of, you know, the context of music is clearly important to you.
Because, well, the core of this project are the composer. It's not myself. It's the music. But we, the audience discovers the life of these composers. So I think it's very important to give them information. Yves Teichepin, even if you don't know exactly his life, you know, you don't know exactly the background of the piece you are listening to, you can associate Chopin to different things. So you have an image. But in the case of these composers, Arab composers, people don't know anything. So I think it's very important to give them some, you know, some information, just so they can build their own idea of the composer, of the country, because it's also a window into the country, into the Arab world.
Do you think that this Arabesque project is something that's going to continue indefinitely, or do you think you'll be starting another project?
Well, you know, in the beginning, I thought it will last 5-10 years, but I was very optimistic because I thought I'll find, you know, sponsors easily. But it turns out it's not that easy at all. So far I haven't really found any major partner in this. Maybe the Royal Academy of Morocco, but things are not very clear at this point. So I don't know. Well, for now I'm doing it, and then we'll see. Well, of course, you know, classical repertoire is so vast, and there are so many things I would love to play in my lifetime. So I try to find a balance between arabesque and everything else. You know, before this concert, I spent the last month practicing Bach. And of course, I will keep practicing Rachmaninov. And there are many, many things I want to learn. And the more I research, the more larger the repertoire becomes. So I just find myself, you know, looking at hours and hours of music to play. I don't play everything, speaking of arabesque. I just play the pieces, the works that I find interesting. Because, you know, let's say most of the composers have, and not only arabesque, in general. Some composers, or most of the composers have pieces that they are not proud of. And it's the same, it applies to these composers as well. So you have to find the score, you have to play it, you know, to digest it, to play again. And then you decide whether it's you know, it can stand its ground on the stage or not. That's difficult to make, but so far I think I brought some nice music to the concerts.
And one more thing on that: now that you're bringing this music to the attention of audiences around the world, do you think that's having any impact? I.e., do you think, you know, other people will start to play this music, will take it up? Is it sparking a broader interest, or do you still feel like you're fighting a one-man crusade?
Well, you know, I get some emails from people who want to devise a program of Middle Eastern composers. So I help them. I give them some tips about, well, there is this piece, this composer. You know, usually, let me be frank, musicians play music from their own country. So when you have an Egyptian pianist, let's say, he would most probably play composers from his own country. Moroccan as well, I did for several years until I started arabesque. So this arabesque is a big project because it's you know, it goes beyond your own borders. It's a vast region, vast territory to explore. And, well, I mean, it's interesting to bring different composers into one program, because when you have, let's say, a program made of Debussy, Liszt, and something, and then you add something, the Moroccan composer, let's say, people won't recognize or won't remember it. But when you have all these composers with all these stories, from my experience, they remember them. And funnily, the composers, because they are paired with other composers, don't pay much attention to this project. I mean, they are not helpful at all, because, you know, I'm not promoting only one of them, but many of them. So, you know, I'm, let's say, lonely in my ride, but I have the support of the public who comes. There are some places where I played 4 different programs so far, because they want to listen to this music. So, and to discover these composers.
Well, one of the obvious things to say about your mixed heritage is that you really do straddle 2 worlds. You know, I feel a proud Moroccan and I feel a proud Hungarian at the same time. I know I told you the other day that I could speak one word of Hungarian, which was egeseregre, which is cheers.
Exactly.
What I did play with is I also, as a young dancer, I learned a Hungarian csárdás, a soldier's dance.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I worked with this group, Musicash, who we were talking about the other day, which maybe leads me on to the last bit of conversation, which was really around, we've got one more piece to play, which is this Hungarian Rhapsody. And this is an interesting collaboration, isn't it, with a different kind of group of musicians. Tell us about that before we hear the final track.
Yeah, a few years ago, I was asked to devise a program for Listomania International Association, and it was a group of people coming to Budapest. And the president asked me if I could do something with a local gypsy band. And well, I didn't have to think much. I thought, yeah, sure, let's do something with Hungarian Rhapsodies, because Liszt Hungarian Rhapsodies are based on Hungarian folk tunes of the 19th century. And they are inspired by gypsy musicians. Liszt himself heard a terrific violinist, you know, I mean, he was amazed by Paganini, but he was also amazed and blown away by Janos Bihari, Jean Bihari, who was a gypsy violinist of his time. And they have so special way of playing music, making music. So I said, yeah, why not try it? So I have this fantastic band, Louis Sarkozy and Company, as I call them. They play the original tunes, and then I play the art music version, what Liszt made out of those tunes. And I think the result is quite entertaining, very interesting, as a matter of fact. We gave several concerts. It was a big hit, I have to say. As a classical musician, I think I've never had such success, because, well, it's somehow in a gray zone between classical and world music. Still, let's say with a greater percentage of classical, Western classical, I mean, art music. But it's always interesting to devise original programs, because in general, I have to say the Western music programming, Western classical music concerts are quite boring. You always find the same composers, the same pieces. You know, Chopin has composed so many seldom played works, but they are like real gems, and they don't play them. You always hear the same Polonaise, the same etudes and whatever. And I think it's very tiring and very boring. You see, so I try myself to bring seldom played repertoire.
That's absolutely fascinating. And we touched on this very briefly when we spoke the other day. You know, as a dancer, I did a project that involved this folk group Musicash, and they released an album called the Bartok album, where they featured original phonograph recordings that Bartok had made, you know, in villages, calling old men and women singing folk tunes. They then played the classical version of it, arranged maybe for two violins, and then they played the full-blown folk version. And what I find fascinating, A, is the link, you know, folk music and dance are so closely connected, but also this, I think this, in a way, lack of snobbishness around, well, this is this kind of music and this is that kind of music. It's all music, it's all great music. And I think maybe we should, first of all, remind people to listen to the concert on Friday the 19th. Please tune in. You can find it on the African Concert Series website or Facebook page. Marion, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. This last piece
Likewise. Of music, so
finish with a bang. It's a wonderful place to end our conversation, but a real delight to talk to you. As I said earlier, it's an education in itself and a great joy. Wish you all the very best for the rest of this year. And let's play out with this wonderful piece, which, just tell us the title of this piece.
It is Hungarian Rhapsody number 13, the lucky number. And thank you, Kenneth. Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.